right, we are back. My Bloody Horrorcast. I know all of you are very sad, and I know you've been missing our podcast.
Well, hey, when a season. We did a spring episode.
That's right.
We did a winter episode. We did our Oscars. Then we did a spring episode a month or so into quarantine.
And this here is our end of summer episode, you know, yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot to talk about, considering, you know, this is COVID year, and we haven't been able to go to the theater to see anything, and most of the releases that we were excited about have been pushed back for months or until next year. There's still been a lot of stuff to watch.
Yeah. I also just want to say, Carrie and I are out here on his deck recording.
So if the cicadas attack us at some point, then please make a horror movie about our untimely demise on my porch from the massive, evil pack of cicadas.
I'm ready for that movie.
I think so. I mean, you know, we have movies about killer flies, killer any animal, but there's never been a killer cicada movie.
It's probably because they sleep so long, but they could be sleeping for years just, like, brewing up energy.
Yeah. Super cicada. I think we've got something there.
Godzilla's found his new foe.
Yes. All right. Let me get to work on writing that.
All right. Well, we were just thinking, since it's been a while, we would just catch up on some movies we've watched recently. And we've got, like, maybe four or so that we've both watched.
What we're watching. That's the headline for this segment. We picked out a few. And a lot of kind of interesting sort of diverse stuff coming out this year. I still say my favorite horror film of the year thus far, up to this point, would be The Invisible Man.
I don't think anything's going to beat The Invisible Man for my favorite 2020 release for horror movies either. I mean, in part because that's the last movie I got to see in theaters. Didn't get to see many.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, definitely of the ones we're talking about tonight, The Invisible Man is much better.
It really is. But that being said, I think there's some interesting stuff here. So yeah, do you want to start with the first one?
Can we start with The Lodge?
We can totally start with The Lodge. So let me preface The Lodge. This was a movie that came in with extremely high expectations. Severin Fiala and Veronica Franz directed Goodnight Mommy. Director duo team. You're going to see a theme from the movies. Some certain themes are going to unfold today of the movies we're talking about. One of them is dual directors.
Yes.
And so this is the first one. So a two-director film. Goodnight Mommy, I thought was... We both loved that.
Yeah, that was good.
I thought it was fantastic. I might have liked it a little bit more than you, but I thought it was an interesting mystery. It had a very satisfying payoff, in my opinion.
For me, that successfully built up a lot of suspense and dread.
It did. And it felt new and different. I hadn't seen anything exactly like that film. Aesthetically, it's great to look at, and so is The Lodge. But oftentimes, follow-ups in a particular genre, you know, when you have a big debut in a particular genre, I know that's not the only film they've directed, but as far as horror, that's the big one for them.
For sure.
Follow-ups are tough. In music, in film, in a lot of art forms, the second one can be a stumbling block. So, you know, The Lodge is a beautiful movie to look at. Cinematography is great. It's incredibly gray.
I'm going to give you all of these things.
Incredibly gray. And at a certain point in the movie, I don't know if I loved that as much as I did in the beginning. It started out, I really liked the color aesthetic, and as it went on, I think I kind of wanted a little bit more from that. But anyway, that's just, you know, we're just talking about the cinematography there. And again, atmosphere-wise, it built up what was potentially leading to an interesting story. I thought there was a buildup for me.
I disagree, but I'm going to let you finish your thoughts here first.
Okay. I really like the kid, Jaden Martell, from It. I think he's really good. I like Riley Keough I've only seen her in a couple things.
Elvis's granddaughter.
Yeah, that's right. Alicia Silverstone, hadn't seen her in a minute.
I love Alicia Silverstone. To me, her...
Excuse me, Alicia, pardon me.
Her scene, her... You know, we're just going to go full spoilers. Her suicide scene was the most jarring part of that movie to me.
It was. And you don't want the most jarring part of your movie to be 8 minutes into it.
Mm-mm.
Ideally. Ideally.
Nope.
So yeah, the basic story... okay, another theme. Another theme I'm seeing in horror movies a lot right now. Divorced dad, or just single dad, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, brings fiance to a cabin and weird things happen.
Yeah.
I've seen that a bunch recently. Or just in general, dad with new fiance, maybe not even in a cabin, but dad with new fiance. Kids don't like it. Weird things happen. Yet another person in the family, they don't know how they don't have the trust built up yet, and it adds some tension. So all those tropes are played out in the lodge. And it felt to me very Hereditary.
Yeah, it's absolutely Hereditary. The miniatures, the
miniatures.
Sleepwalking. Okay, well, I'm just going to...
So that's me. So there's my take. Now, do you want to discuss the actual plot? I'm talking about some elements of it.
No, I'm also going to talk about some elements.
Well, then let me go through the plot
yeah,
real
go
quick.
Through the plot.
Basic plot. So you've got dad, new girlfriend, fiance, going to the cabin for the weekend with his two kids. They're going to... He really wants them to meet up with new girlfriend slash fiance. Now that mom is no longer around,
mm-hmm.
kids are not happy about it. They're still very disaffected, and obviously, you know, they have not gotten over her death yet. And so you throw all this together in one claustrophobic setting out in the middle of nowhere, in the dead of winter, and you're going to expect some serious atmospheric things.
Oops,
we
sorry.
Get this sense that she, signals from beyond, we get this sense that she may have been part of a cult. If you're talking about just the beginning, you know, the premise of the film, it probably had, she had something to do with the cult. We don't quite know how much and how deeply that affected her at the beginning of the film, but she's obviously a fairly disturbed woman. Right at the outset, she seems...
I'm gonna say
unhappy.
It seems like she's reached a really healed and functional point, though. Like, she's on anxiety medication.
Right.
I think it's inappropriate that this guy decided to... Did I interpret this correctly? He started a relationship with a woman for a book he was researching.
Isn't she, like, a patient of his?
Something like that. He's, like, an author, though.
Yes. Maybe that's it. Yeah, maybe she's the research subject, I guess. Is that
yeah.
led to believe? Okay, yeah.
I mean, that feels gross.
Sure. Also, as a dad, and I am a dad, I don't think there's any way in hell that I would leave my two young kids who are already super upset about the death of their mom and leave them with this other woman that they've never met and go away... on, I guess, a work trip. He already expected to leave the cabin, leave them together alone. That was his plan. Terrible plan.
Yeah, he kind of fails as both a father and a romantic partner.
He doesn't come across as very sympathetic. He's just not a very likable dude. And, you know, that can be played to good effect in some cases. So that's the general plot of The Lodge. What was your take?
Yeah, spooky things start happening. Not spooky enough, in my opinion. So The Lodge has a lot of things that I like. There's a hot woman who comes from an extremist Christian death cult. It's a holiday horror. It's set around Christmas. And Alicia Silverstone's in it. But mm-hmm. it really did, like... Sorry. Very few things work for me. It moves at such a glacial pace, but I just didn't think there was a successful buildup of suspense. I really didn't feel... the atmosphere just wasn't effective for me. I was really bored watching it. I'm rarely bored.
And I think both of us don't mind a slow burn indie film, whether it's horror or whether it's just a slow burn indie film of any genre. I think we're both pretty patient viewers.
I think so too. This was boring in a different way. I mean, Elvis' granddaughter's side boob is on display, I was still bored, Carrie. I was just like, I need to see something happening here. So I will say, to do with the plot, since we're just going into spoilers, it's revealed that the kids have been gaslighting her.
The whole time. She's haunted. Through most of the film, she is haunted. And you get the sense early on that it's probably the kids.
I have to say, I didn't totally predict that. You're better at calling the twist than I am, but by the time they're getting to the thing where they're telling her that they're in purgatory...
You know then, for sure.
Yeah. And I simply was not sorry for their fate. Maybe I'm really terrible about this, and also not as sympathetic to movie children, because children in horror movies are made to aggravate. But they let a dog freeze to death out of spite. Like, what is wrong with these kids?
No, that's the thing. It is hard to have... The dog is the reason why I had a hard time as well, feeling sympathy for them. You need... If you're going to have child actors that feel in a film like that, and it is kind of daring, actually, to make the kids the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, they do throw some twists in there. Of course, as we know in Good Night Mommy, there were some elements of that as well.
That's the thing, though. I didn't think they were trying to make the kids the bad guys. It was supposed to be like...
But the element of, are the kids good or are they bad? You know, you get that sense of both movies plays on that fear.
It kind of, I don't know how to describe this, but like a heist gone wrong movie, that's what this was like. It's like they had mean kid intentions, but it went horrifically wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. This one just wasn't for me, and it was so hyped up. It was recommended to me by multiple people.
Oh yeah, the reviews were off the charts.
I might have felt differently seeing it in theaters. I've definitely watched movies in theaters where the atmosphere has taken a stronger hold, but for me... I don't know. I think I gave it, like, 2 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd.
See, I was watching on I have a pretty big TV in my living room with a good sound system, and I was alone. Like, that's a good scenario to watch a horror movie at your house.
Your movie setup is, like, totally rad.
Well, you've got the collection, though, so I'll give you that. The actual film collection Steph has is pretty impressive, both VHS and DVD/Blu-ray. I ultimately ended the film... feeling like I'd kind of seen these things before.
Yeah.
And kind of feeling like most of it I'd seen before. It just didn't come off as very exciting to me, which the climax should have. I mean, there are some, again, it's very well shot. It's technically, I mean, these are good filmmakers. There's no doubt about that. But it just, the wind left the sails for me.
Yeah,
relatively
same.
Early on.
It sounds like we rarely agree so much on something.
So much on something, yeah. Okay, so that's The Lodge.
Oh, do we want to go... You pick the next movie we discuss.
I want to keep on the kid side of things. Movies about kids that are, you know, have some attitude.
Oh, let's talk about Becky.
Yes, yes.
This is a film that is opposite in pacing from The Lodge. Like, it really never lets up, and it's pretty fun. Carrie described it to me as, like, rated R Home Alone. And I'm like, rated R Home Alone, but, like, Paul Blart, convict Nazi.
Yes. Paul Blart, mall Nazi. It's, yeah. The premise is, I mean, it's real easy to describe. Neo-Nazis escape from jail. They've hidden something, which you never find out what it is. They've hidden something in a cabin. They go to that cabin to find the thing they left. And unfortunately, there is a family staying at the cabin. And Steph, guess what? It's a dad, estranged, divorced from his wife, who brings his new fiance and her son to meet and hang out with his daughter.
We should just call this like the fiance kiss of death. Like.
Yes, yes.
Although this, spoiler, this fiance makes it.
No. And she was good. You know, she's a good actress. So Lulu Wilson is the star of the film. She is Becky. And as you recall, Lulu Wilson is great in Ouija, Origin of Evil. The Mike Flanagan directed sequel to Ouija.
Yeah.
And she's awesome. Great in Annabelle Creation. And both those movies, as far as horror sequels go, are both really solid horror sequels. Mm-hmm. I think we both have talked about enjoying those. You've got Kevin James playing totally against type, probably more against type he's ever played, as this neo-Nazi skinhead, and I think he's pretty effective.
I thought he was good. Yeah, I definitely didn't feel distracted by him in that role or was taken out of it in any way. And Joe McHale plays Lulu Wilson's dad, Becky's dad.
Jeff, who he's also Jeff on Community, so he really likes that name. Yeah, I was impressed. I felt like Kevin James is actually acting in this. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like in Mall Cop and Zookeeper Extraordinaire, whatever that movie is. Zoo Man. You know, I feel like he's doing, and good for him. Kevin James is a great physical comedian, so I'm not faulting him for that. But he doesn't really, he's acting, sure, but that just comes naturally to him. Playing a neo-Nazi skin, it does not come natural to him, and he does it well, so I have to give him that.
Yeah, no, I thought he did a good job. But the star of this movie is Lulu Wilson. I was not expecting... We've definitely seen some violent kids portrayed in movies before.
Not like this.
She is letting out some primal screams, like some vicious, full survival mode, like insane. She's fashioning shivs out of school rulers.
I've never seen colored pencils used to such effect to maim and kill somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she...
I'm putting it next to... I went to my daughter's room and picked up all her colored pencils after this movie, and I put them up on a high shelf. I was like, nope.
It just has a lot of really elaborate blood-splattered kills. I thought it was really fun.
It's incredibly gory, which is, yeah, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say... The frame tale for this movie is she's being interrogated, I guess, by the police, and they're kind of like, oh, you don't know what happened to these guys? Come on. And they know that she probably murdered them in these gruesome ways, but she's just like, I don't know. So they also kind of give you a hint, like, Becky's like a psychopath.
No, that's the thing. She's the protagonist, but it's so brutal that you're kind of like, I'd be sort of scared to be around that kid. I don't know if I want to spend much time around Becky. I don't know.
It is one of the most...
I'm not sure.
It is one of the most unique, like, kind of coming-of-age movies. Because when you see, like, some of her little flashbacks, she's, like, a girl who's, like, kind of a misfit at school.
Right.
She's just lost her mom. So she's in, like, a weird transitional phase of her life where she's being introduced to this future stepmom. Like, she's... grieving over the loss of her mother. She's being picked on in school.
Mm-hmm.
And then this happens, and it's like she's able to funnel all of this teenage angst into a lot of murder.
Yeah, lots of murder. Oh, another trope. Two directors.
I didn't notice this at all. I cannot believe all these movies we're talking about have two directors.
And you know what these two guys directed? It's Jonathan Milliot. Or Emilio and Carrie Burnion. They did Cooties, which I loved.
I've never seen Cooties.
Cooties is awesome.
Okay.
It's one of those really fun zombie flicks that has Elijah Wood and Rainn Wilson, two of the stars in it. And it's a lot of fun. I didn't know, watching Becky, actually, that they were the directors of Cooties. Now it makes sense. Both movies are high octane, quick editing, fun, gory, but with some heart. Becky really doesn't have really any heart in here. Cooties has all sorts of heart with the characters. There's a lot of fun stuff. Becky's just, like, bad to the bone. Gruesome. It's fun.
She is.
So, here's my overall take on the movie. I think it's a lot of fun. Is it great? No. Can I recommend it to someone who wants, like, some, like, serious horror stuff, serious gore? Sure. Yeah, absolutely would.
Hey, I rented Becky from a Redbox when I was picking up my groceries, and I do not regret that purchase.
No. I rented it on Prime, and I, you know, and what I paid for it, I was like, that's totally fair. I probably would have seen it in the theater. We probably would have seen it in the theater
had it
been in there. And I paid less than that. Cool.
I was thinking, like, what a bummer it is. Like, I would be spending summer... as much of summer as possible in, like, an AC theater. Watching all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't even care if they're good movies many days, so I definitely miss that.
I'm right there with you, sister.
Yeah. Well, do we want to move on to a movie starring a way less cool teenager?
Yes.
I want to talk about The Wretched.
That sounds good. So, of these first three, it's a hard... I'm trying to figure out what my favorite is of this batch. It's a tough call. The Wretched and Becky are definitely probably tied as my favorites of this first batch.
Yeah, they're solid enough movies.
Mm-hmm. The Wretched, you've got, yes, John Paul Howard, a very kind of, again, he's a kid who's doesn't quite fit in. There's some Becky-ish stuff there. He's staying with his dad. Parents are going through, you know, rough times, separated. And he doesn't quite know what's going on. He's just trying to figure it out. They're in a new, he's staying with his dad in a new house. He hasn't really spent much time in. And he's not rich like a lot of the kids. His dad owns a, I guess, a rental company. It's what a,
yeah.
They rent out, I guess he runs the dock there.
Yeah, so this kid's just like basically working on the marina.
Or the marina, yeah.
But he's like in a Keeping Up with the Joneses thing, like he goes to like a pool party with his peers and gets bullied and stuff. I don't know. I guess I would describe this movie like essentially this teen boy starts noticing that his next door neighbor is up to something weird, like eventually revealed to be supernatural and evil.
And this starts out very much reminds me of like a, you know, Fright Night was Rear Window. So this is Rear Window and Fright Night and a little Stranger Things.
Totally Fright Night. This just made me want to rewatch Fright Night, which I just did. But I was thinking, another example, I wonder if this is just a weird mindset we're all in when we're streaming a bunch of stuff in the pandemic, because I think if I'd stumbled upon this in a video store, it'd been made in the 80s and I just discovered it, I would be like, whoa, this is really cool.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're going for. So it's Drew and Brett Pierce. This is their second film, but honestly, I don't think anyone's, neither their first film or the shorts, they really had much distribution. So this is the first film of theirs I think most people are seeing.
And it looks like they were pretty creative with the budget. The effects look good, like on The Witch.
Oh man, lots of practical effects. If the movies we're watching, you know, The Lodge and Becky are not effects heavy. I mean, there's gore effects in Becky, but you don't have big practical creature effects or anything like that for the most part in these first two. This one has, the witch effects are really good.
Yeah, The Witch looks terrifying. There's like, I don't know. I mean, it's like a jump scare witch, so she got me a couple times that way. But it's like a bone-crunching, child-eating witch.
Yeah.
And they go all out with these effects. I thought The Witch was totally great, but the teen boy is just a major drag.
Really? See, I remember being sort of like a disaffected teen boy when I was a kid, not fitting in, moving into a new town. Living in an area surrounded by very rich kids and not fitting in whatsoever. So to me, I get you, boy. I get you, man.
Well, Carrie has a kinder heart. I was ready for this witch to break his other arm. Like, he's got one arm in a cast.
I liked his friend, Piper Curda, who I guess is a child star. She's been working since she was in her... she was a teenager.
Is that his coworker who
his
has,
coworker.
Like,
his coworker. And they have sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Almost kind of a thing. And
they
there's some...
a little teen connection.
There are some actually really sweet scenes with them, and it just never quite works out, which I sort of like, too, in a way. It wasn't necessarily a completely cliche, like, oh, at the end they fall in love, because they really don't. Mm-mm. But they have these opportunities that just pass them by. But they do team up. She does like him and he does like her. And so I thought there was some good tension between them. I did think their scenes provided some of the heart of the movie, along with some of the scenes with him and his dad. They did have some good moments, the two of them. It, you know, ultimately, I think it's one of those films where I really enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. Am I going to remember it 10 years from now? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I will.
I don't know if it warrants even a rewatch or anything, but I'd recommend it to people.
It's really fun. Yeah, I don't know what would separate it from being a film that we would say, oh, you've got to see it. But I'd like to see what these guys do again. I'd like to see their next film.
For sure.
I think it's interesting. And it was the number one film in theaters for 5 weeks in May 2020.
What?
That's because the theaters were shut down for the most part, and it was one of only a handful of movies playing in the entire USA.
Oh, although this does bring me to something. I really am going to try to get to a drive-in movie theater in this time.
Yes, we have three within a couple hours drive of where we're at here in Athens. So, and I've had a couple friends that have gone to, they're two north of us, and I've heard some good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Good reviews. They've just got to play something I'm really psyched to go see. Unfortunately, most of the movies they were playing when we were all quarantined were kind of like teeny bopper stuff that I just wasn't really into.
Yeah.
But The Wretched, we get, you know, I would give The Wretched a solid, if not great, rating for me.
Yeah, totally solid. And I guess the fourth movie that we both watched, although I watched it much earlier in the year, so my memory's a little fuzzier, is we both watched Freaks, which
yes.
is a fairly original and compelling, like, superhero movie.
It is. And guess what, Steph?
Two directors!
Zach Lipinski and Adam Stein, who directed Leprechaun Origins, which I've never seen.
Oh, shit. Which one is that?
It's one of the newer Leprechauns.
The new one that came out on Sci-Fi Channel and doesn't have Warwick Davis? I need to know right now. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, as we're talking, we'll do some on the fly research here. Freaks is a really, really interesting movie, and honestly, I don't know if you can really call it a true horror film. So, you know, stretching a little bit by including it in our podcast, but it has some horror elements to it.
I mean, there are people with special abilities being kidnapped and tortured. That's always scary. And I feel like I personally am not that interested in seeing New Mutants, but I'm sure that would qualify as horror.
The reviews are just atrocious. I mean, I get it. New Mutants was the concept for New Mutants. I think production or development of it started years ago. It was going to be an R-rated horror film. R-rated horror superhero film.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And then they reshot, re-edited, did new special effects, turned into a PG-13 movie, and I imagine, because we've seen this happen in movies before, I'm sure everything, the best parts of what it was before are probably have washed out completely at this point, is my guess. It doesn't work most of the time when you reshoot a movie like that and go through multiple writers and multiple storylines.
It is a bummer. I've got to say, X-Men is my favorite Marvel franchise, and it just doesn't always work. It's too bad.
Growing up, I would, you know, my three favorite Marvel comics were Spider-Man, X-Men, and the Silver Surfer.
Oh, yeah.
I always loved X-Men, though. And I mean, the original Chris Claremont stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the way to, you know, I don't remember where I stopped watching, but I mean, throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
I got hooked with, like, Grant Morrison kicking in. Yeah, I mean, Chris Claremont, classic. I don't know. Anyway, probably not seeing New Mutants, but all this to say that I think a movie like Freaks, there's totally a place to discuss it on our podcast. Also, we can talk about whatever we want.
It's our world, y'all. So, Steph, you are indeed correct that the Leprechaun Origins movie that Lipinski and Stein directed has Dylan Postal as the Leprechaun.
Oh, shit, that's
not
right.
Warwick Davis. Yeah, so you're correct.
Okay, but that's not the one that just came out, though. It's like
this is
right
2014.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe there's yet another one.
I think there's a newer Leprechaun movie, and that one I have not seen.
Oh, Leprechaun Returns.
Yes.
And that has... Yeah, yet another Lyndon Porco.
So I've not seen the newest Leprechaun, but at some point I did watch Leprechaun Origins.
Nice. You were going through a Leprechaun there for a minute. I do remember that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's a pretty consistent franchise. It gets so wacky that, like, I don't know, I'm good with it. I will say this, Ice-T is not in enough horror movie franchises. I would like to see him appear in more, but there he is in one of the Leprechaun movies. So, anyway.
The original gangster. Freaks. You've got a young girl who is holed up in a house. Windows are covered up. You're really not sure why. Her dad and her live in this house, just the two of them evidently, although you kind of wonder... someone else there, and as things kind of unfold, they peel away the layers of the plot very slowly and deliberately, and what you find out is there's a lot going on with this little girl. There's absolutely a very good reason that she's holding this house and not allowed out. People looking for her. She is not an ordinary girl. She has powers that we don't even completely know the extent of in the film. Mm-hmm. We don't really you get the sense that she's powerful in all sorts of ways that could be developed if they ever decide to continue this story. And you find out that her mom, who, you know, who she thinks is dead, may or may not be dead. All sorts of little things start to unfold. There's a weird ice cream man, Bruce Dern.
Bruce Dern!
Emil Hirsch is the dad, who I think is always a consistently great actor. And Lexi Kolker, this girl, is really, really good. She's so good.
I thought she was great, too.
Amanda Cruz from Silicon Valley is her mom. Amanda Cruz is always solid as well. I loved it.
I think this is probably one of the most emotionally impactful movies we're going to discuss, if not...
Easily, yeah.
I mean, it's really sad to see this, like, little kid who's been isolated and doesn't understand why and is forced to feel like something's wrong with her, but she can't put her finger on it. And there's this really sad part of the movie where she's trying to befriend her neighbor through, like, manipulation, and she's just totally rejected because it's freaky for her to bust into that girl's mind.
Right. She definitely has strong ESP, for sure. And telekinesis, seems like. You know, she doesn't have a hold of her powers, so she doesn't know how to harness them yet. And she does use them in potentially life-threatening ways, mm-hmm. without realizing it. And there's some really good scenes about that. We've seen, obviously, that there are a lot of... in superhero films, it's dealt with a lot of times with younger... superheroes who don't quite have that mastery of their powers, and I always find that to be pretty compelling, and it's very compelling in this.
I do want to see Bruce Dern in more things.
He's great.
I always want to see him.
Bruce Dern is super creepy until you realize who he is.
I know, and they're totally playing up with that too, like this creepy ice cream man.
And it's done very well, because there's a great scene where she finally gets out of the house, mm-hmm. and walks towards that ice cream van, and everything seems completely surreal, and it is actually, because she's manipulating the environment around her to a certain extent. It's an incredibly creepy scene. And you're thinking to yourself, this guy is going to throw her in the ice cream truck and we're never going to see her again. Mm-hmm. But then you realize, no, it's way more than that. There's actually a relation there, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I don't want to go into every aspect of it, but yeah, you find out that he is not who he seems at the beginning.
Yeah, Freaks is totally worth watching. Recommend.
Yes, that is one of the better ones. Again, if we're looking at horror lists at the end of the year, again, even though this is not straight horror, I would probably still have to put that in one of my best of lists, probably.
Wow,
for the year.
It's going to be nuts to reflect on this year of movies.
I know, it's such a strange year.
Well, do we want to talk about other things we've been watching?
Yeah. Do you want to start?
Okay. Well, I'm going to do two, but just really briefly. So I watched Demon, which came out in 2015, and that is like a very atmospheric Polish horror movie set at a wedding. My friend described it to me as like longer than the wedding scene in The Deer Hunter, and... that is not a joke, because the entire movie takes place at this wedding. It's light on the scares, but it's so beautiful and, like, creepy. I actually had to look up Dybbuk. Have you heard of that?
Is that the...
It's the Jewish folklore ghost.
Okay.
Kind of like a ghost vampire. And after watching Demon, I was just like, what else is a Dybbuk in? And it turns out this movie called The Possession, which I remember seeing, like, trailers for, but didn't watch... Do you remember, like, not that long ago, but, like, at least a few years earlier, there were all these possession movies coming out, like The Possession of This, The Possession of That.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose started that,
yes.
And then it was, like, The Possession of Hannah Montana or whatever, and all these,
right.
yeah.
So this one's just The Possession, and this one's about a daughter who becomes obsessed with this Dybbuk box, and she becomes... possessed by this demon. And I would actually recommend it. It definitely looks a little bit dated today, even though it's still in the 2000s. It's kind of got that gray blue color palette, and some of the effects not perfect. The moths really look like computer graphics, but there's this one scene where...
Sorry about the dog bark in the background, by the way.
That's okay. Anyway, there's this scene in The Possession where a dentist is losing his teeth, and it's a nightmare that I myself have had so many times. I like actually clenched my jaw like watching it. I'm just like, oh, I can't take it. So I thought The Possession was actually really good. So those are my two, The Demon and The Possession, both featuring a Dybbuk. Okay. I think we're ready for more Dybbuk movies whenever the time comes to make more movies.
Hollywood producers, are you listening to Steph right now, please?
But I've got a bunch more. What do you have?
So, yeah, I've been, my viewing in the last month or two has been light on horror. I've watched a lot of stuff, but it's just spanned all sorts of genres. Easily the most fun horror movie I've watched new in the last couple months has been, as far as old school, was Maniac Cop 2.
Maniac Cop 2!
Somehow, I've seen Maniac Cop multiple times, of course, obviously, but for whatever reason, never seen Part 2. And it's a stacked cast of great B-movie stalwarts. You've got Robert Davi, Michael Lerner's actually an A-list actor, slumming it a little bit, which I love. Bruce Campbell, Robert Dazar, Leo Rossi, Clarence Williams III. It's a great cast. William Lustig directed it.
Yeah, well, Bruce Campbell's reprising his role for a minute.
He's in it for a minute. And then, you know, William Lustig, of course, started out doing the movie Maniac. And then he did Maniac Cop, the Maniac Cop 2, Maniac Cop 3. I was very disappointed that he didn't do another Maniac film with 8 more words attached to the title. But either way, it's so much fun. You've got Matt Cordell, the Maniac Cop, trying to hunt down the actual criminals that killed him in jail, you know, leading to the events of the first one. And you've got a serial killer, Leo Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
And they team up.
Yeah.
And it is totally nutso. Great action scenes. Yeah.
No, Maniac Cop 2 is a delight. I also watched it for the first time this year, but much earlier, and I wasn't paying enough attention. It was so good.
I mean, they were excellent. The chase scenes were great. All these great car chase scenes. Really inventive stuff, actually, for a very low-budget movie. Mm-hmm. I think they stretched that budget very, very well. You know, I also found out, I didn't know this, I should have, that William Lustig, or Bill as his friends call him, he first, you know, after he stopped directing films, you know, full-time as his main career, he started producing retrospectives for Anchor Bay, and then, as you probably know, so he created Blue Underground.
I didn't know that.
So Blue Underground is his company, so he's releasing cool cult films from the past, and, you know, and he's always been good friends with Larry Cohen. Obviously, Larry Cohen wrote the first two Maniac Cops, and you know, he worked with Sam Raimi on Darkman. So I did a deep dive into, researched who William Lustig is, and found it pretty interesting.
I gotta watch more Lustig movies. Well, I still want to see Maniac Cop 3. I've not seen that. Have you?
I've heard it's a complete and utter shit show, and I want to see it. Lustig either got fired or walked off the set at one point,
God.
and they had to finish it with a different director. Yeah, evidently, I don't know if it was. I think he and the producers were having some static. I don't know if anyone was getting along on the set of Maniac Cop 3 from what I've read, but I am also very curious about that.
All right, we'll totally watch it. Well, I'm just gonna go off that because this movie also has like kind of an impressive cast for horror fans. I watched Sleepwalkers from 1992 for the first time ever. Mick Garris directs it. The script's by Stephen King. It may be one of my favorite King movies. It's not a masterpiece, but I just had so much fun with these incest, werecat, energy vampires. So if
it's
you're
one
a
I've never
fan,
seen. It's one
oh,
I've never seen.
Shit. Okay, well, then I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but Alice Krieg, who I saw most recently as the witch in Gretel and Hansel, is...
She's just... Think about how long she's been working in horror film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like since the dawn of time, since the first horror film. And she still looks exactly the same.
Yeah, and she's just totally fantastic in
this.
She's great. She's beautiful and creepy. Madchen Amik from Twin Peaks is our high school heroine. This movie would actually make a great double feature with I'm Dangerous Tonight, since that also is an early 90s movie with Madchen,
which you've talked about a lot this year and still have yet to see.
Love it. But get this, there are cameos from Stephen King, Clive Barker, Toby Hooper, John Landis, Joe Dante, and Mark Hamill.
Well, most of those, like a who's who of directors at that horror directors at that time. Wow.
And then just throw in like a little 90s Mark Hamill.
There you go.
Okay, and I guess the only spoiler I want to say is there is an outrageous death involving Corn on the Cob.
All right.
was cackling. I thought it was so good. I also, there's a hero cat in the movie named Clovis, which brings me, since we've discussed movies that have featured dead dogs and violence to dogs, trigger warning for Becky, we forgot to say that earlier.
Oh yeah, Becky also, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
What's up with killing dogs? I guess that...
I feel emotionally manipulated, Carrie.
Well, I think it's maybe nothing shocking anymore as far as like the, you know, the torture to humans that we see in mm-hmm. film. And so I guess the next step is killing dogs.
Do not like this trend. Do not like it.
No, it's bad.
But there are many images of dead cats in Sleepwalkers, because one of the things is that these werewolf cat people are deadly afraid and vulnerable to domestic cats. Anyway, recommend. It is awesome.
Sleepwalkers. All right. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's about all I've seen. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add. I did have a couple films that are coming up this month that I'm interested in. I thought maybe we could just preview for a second, but do you have anything else?
Okay, I have a shit ton of stuff, but I guess I'll just do one more.
Well, pick the greatest hits.
Okay, so I saw Antiviral for the first time. I'd never seen that before. Have you seen it? It's directed by Brandon Cronenberg.
No, I have not.
Okay, well, it's his debut feature, and anyone who loves his dad, David Cronenberg's earlier body horror movies, is going to love this. It's freaky and gross. It's like this version of our world where people are paying money. Like, instead of to get plastic surgery, they're paying to be injected with celebrity diseases. Like, they're straight up, give me this celebrity's herpes. And
what?
Yeah.
Oh, that's totally Cronenberg.
Yeah, and you can go to the butcher and get a piece of lab-made celebrity meat and eat cloned celebrity meat, what it would taste like. I think this...
So not-so-subtle discussion of our current cultural climate obsession with pretty faces.
Yeah, so it stars Caleb Landry Jones, who we've seen in Get Out, like New Twin Peaks.
He's low-key a great actor.
I've decided after seeing Antiviral that I totally agree.
I've seen a few things now.
There's something about him where at first I was just like, I don't know. Oh, Three Billboards. He's awesome.
It's great.
But after watching this, I'm like, this guy is a great actor. He's just right for this role. Very creepy, but also very boyish.
Mm-hmm. He also put out a very strange album this year.
What?
A double album that is totally bizarre and kind of interesting. It's like Sergeant Pepper in Hell or something like that. it's some strange avant-garde folk rock, but even that's not really a good description of it. Yeah, he's an interesting dude.
This is the first I've heard of his musical career, and I am intrigued. Oh, Malcolm McDowell is also in Antiviral. He shows up for a minute.
I love me some Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, to also be like a creepy celebrity-obsessed doctor. It's great.
Sweet. Okay, I can totally see him doing that.
All right. Able to talk about the rest another time. What are you excited about seeing?
So, the movie I'm most excited about seeing by far this month, although there are a couple, would be Charlie Kaufman's new film, I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Oh, that is based on a book, isn't it?
It is, and I'm not familiar with the source material of the book, but I do know that I will watch anything that Charlie Kaufman writes, for the most part. I think there's one or two of his films I haven't seen. This looks really interesting. It's very, it all takes place in a house. So, unlike most of his movies, I think it's fairly sprawling, lots of locations. This one is very claustrophobic, evidently. It's got Jesse Plemons in it,
mm-hmm.
who, again, is one of those... Sort of, or Jesse, excuse me, is it, yeah, Jesse Plemons,
Jesse Plemons,
and there's a Jesse Buckley, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Low-key, great actor.
I think he's just plainly a great actor. I remember, like, when he was on Breaking Bad, at first I was just like, I don't know, but after, like, Fargo, I was just like, he rules.
Oh, yeah.
He's so good.
And, of course, you got Toni Collette, one of the best actresses, one of the best
she
actors
is.
In general
she's always,
working
she's
in the game.
Great.
And David Thewlis. So it's an interesting cast, but he writes and directs it. And, you know, a lot, he doesn't always direct his own films. I like it when he does. So I'm really, really excited about that. Basic premise is a woman travels with her new boyfriend to his parents' secluded farm. And weird things happen as they get there. Evidently, so yeah, it's called I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and it's coming out on Friday, so it should be released to VOD by then, I imagine.
Oh, probably by the time you're listening to this, it is on VOD.
Probably, because it takes us a minute to get this thing going.
I didn't know it was coming out so soon, too. I'm going to watch that as well.
Yep, it's going to be a lot. 2 hours, 14 minutes. Can't wait. I'll watch any length of a Charlie Kaufman film.
Oh, hell yeah. What else do you have?
The other one is Antebellum.
Antebellum
should be coming out this month. Assuming these movies don't, you know, release dates don't get pushed back, we should be seeing both of those. Janelle Monáe, mm-hmm. who's great. She's a really, really great actress. You never know how musicians are going to translate to working in film or TV, what have you. And I think the limited stuff I've seen Janelle Monáe in, she's great.
She's made some interesting choices, too. I did not... Oh, goddamn, I'm blanking on the name. Did you watch that anthology sci-fi series on Prime? I watched it because Steve Buscemi's in an episode.
I did not. I mean, I love Steve Buscemi, but no, I did not.
But there's another episode that Janelle Monáe is in, and that might have been...
Is it Homecoming? She was in a show called Homecoming. It was in 2018 through now.
All right, I've just got to...
And there was one called Electric Dreams.
Yeah, it's Electric Dreams. Okay. So I thought that was really interesting.
That was the Philip K. Dick one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Which I've not seen. But yeah, I mean, the cast is great. You've got her, you've got Cranston, you got Buscemi, you got Terrence Howard.
Not all the episodes work, but...
No.
The actors all work.
Greg Kinnear, Richard Madden from G.O.T., Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's an interesting cast. Anna Paquin, wow.
I didn't know Antebellum was coming out so soon either.
So that's coming out. Let's see here. Just a couple of these are just movies of note. I don't know how excited I am to see them. I thought The Babysitter was super fun. MCG, McG, whatever you want to call it.
McG.
And I thought that it was just, it was just an absolute blast. However, they are coming out with a sequel.
There's a sequel?
Babysitter 2, Killer Queen. Horror sequels... In my opinion, tend to be.
Do they have the same actress?
Pretty
the
rough.
Ready or not?
Nope.
Lady? What? Well, yeah, I guess she met her end.
She is not with us anymore after the end of that movie, no. In that universe. So it is a new cast. I think the kid's the same. Whoever lived is still alive in this one.
What is their excuse for him still having a babysitter or any connection to any babysitters?
You would hope that for any plausibility that. He is not the one with the bad babysitter, but maybe he's the friend of the person with the bad babysitter. I don't know.
Well, whatever. Sure. I'll watch Babysitter 2. Why not?
I mean, it should be fine. There's another home invasion horror coming out. We had Don't Breathe, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
4 years ago? Now we have The Owners. It's got Maisie Williams from another Game of Thrones alum. And evidently, it throws a twist on the old jerk kids break into old people's house. Try to steal some stuff. The old people fight back. Evidently, this one has all those tropes, but it gets really weird and really crazy and goes off in some bizarre directions.
Oh.
So, I'm kind of interested in that. And then there's one called Let It Snow, which is evidently the female lead is trailed by a killer on a snowmobile.
Okay. I'm 100% in for that movie.
I knew.
Always trying to add to like my cold wintry horror movies.
It's going to be apparently it's going to be right up your alley.
Sometimes I get tricked though. I'm still really upset about The Meg.
You know, I still need to see The Meg.
You don't need to see it, Carrie.
I've heard that I should.
From who?
A bunch of friends like super bad movies, but you did not like that one, huh?
No, and I love bad movies, and I love shark movies. More importantly, I've watched plenty of bad ones that I enjoyed Deep Blue Sea 2, and I'm about to rent 3.
See, I'm not going to go that far, but...
But Deep Blue Sea 2 is better than The Meg.
Wow. Okay. All right.
The Meg is a soulless money grab where Jason Statham is in some sort of relationship with zero chemistry with a beautiful Chinese woman. There's no blood because it's PG. I thought it was going to be like Piranha 3D where we were going to see dicks in the water. No such luck, Carrie. I was very upset.
Well, Piranha 3D is awesome.
Yeah.
Piranha 3D is just totally ridiculous and super awesome. So, yeah, it would be hard to match up to that.
I'm actually not sure what I'm... I think I'm still catching up on a lot of stuff. Baccarat came out right at the start of the pandemic. I still want to see it.
There's a lot that I still have to see. Baccarat is one that is on my list for horror films for this year, so we're discussing that one. I still haven't seen Dave Franco's The Rental.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
I have not seen A Good Woman Is Hard to Find is one that's on my list.
Whoa.
One Bedroom or One BR was another one. Oh, House Horror.
I heard One BR was pretty good. I'll watch that.
The Other Lamb, about a woman and another woman in a cult movie. We had Them That Follow or whatever from last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Platform I still haven't seen.
Oh, shit. I did watch The Platform.
You loved it, right?
I didn't love it. The premise is really good, though. It's like a battle royale, but it's a vertical prison. So people are serving their time on different levels. But it's interesting. Like, it really is about... I think it's just a good criticism on capitalism, so it's timely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the other two are After Midnight and Come to Daddy. Both of those had really good reviews, and I haven't seen
either. Is Come to Daddy another Elijah Wood movie?
It's another Elijah Wood movie.
That is on my watch list, but I don't know. I've also been getting really into, like, all these other things. Like, what is on my watch list?
Of horror, that's what's on mine. I mean, there's a bunch of different stuff on mine. In general, I want to see Get Duped. That looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, well, but the other thing I've my entire month of August was watching Charles Bronson movies. I watched
That's true.
Death Wish 1 through 5.
And I talked to you before you'd watched 5, I think. So
5 is so good. I sent Carrie a clip of a soccer ball explosion that I just thought was cinematic genius.
And, Steph, I was so psyched by that clip that I've decided that I probably need to go back and watch those films.
Kwan's
going to
watch them. I just lent him 5. So when that comes back, you should borrow his 2 through 4.
Nice. Nice. So, yeah, so, I think the fall is going to... A lot of good stuff lays in store for us this fall. There's still a lot to see. I think by the time you and I are talking in December... We're going to... Or January.
I know. We'll make plans to do
We'll probably have an episode
that,
before
but who
then.
Knows?
But by the time we get to our end of best of the year list is what I'm going for.
Yeah.
I think that right now the list is fairly spare for me. I just haven't seen that many new horror films that would make it onto a best of list. But I think by the time we get through a lot of the ones that we just discussed that we haven't seen yet that are already out or some of the ones to come out, it's going to be a good year.
Oh my God. What are actual movie awards going to look like this year with all the festivals?
I don't know.
Hmm.
You know, maybe by the time... Yeah, I guess it's tough to say. I mean, festival season's going to be a mess.
Well, I mean, it's...
It's already done, anyway.
Yeah, like, Tribeca couldn't happen.
No, but I'm saying that, I'm guessing they're probably going to delay, they're probably going to start at some weird time, unless they just wait for the cycle to start over. I would think that, maybe some of these festivals pop up in, maybe January or February, I don't know. Who knows, though? Maybe we don't see them until next summer.
Oh my God, I can't remember if I got to give this a shout out in our last episode. I don't think it was released yet, but one thing I watched and have definitely told you about is I bought my first brand new VHS in decades from Black Video in Portland, and it's called Ramboner, and it's Ramboner and Ramboner Part 2, and it is delightful. It is not porn. It is just goofy and great. Highly recommend if you're able to get your hand on a copy.
Ramboner. And with that?
Yeah. I mean, this was a nice catch-up.
This was a good one. No, it's good to be back. It's good to talk about horror with you, as always.
Mm-hmm.
I've been missing it. I think we've both been missing it. So I'm glad we got to finish the new episode. And hopefully the next one will come out, sooner than the last one did.
Yeah, well, we've got to have a fall episode at least.
That's right. Fall is a great time for horror.
I know. I'm so sad that we're not going to have the 31 Days of Darkness at Flicker Bar here in Athens this year.
It is sad. Maybe we'll have to figure out a watered-down version of our own where we watch individually and discuss.
Well, I'm definitely going to try to watch a horror movie every day in October. There are 2 full moons. I'm going to go for it. And there's certainly enough movies on my watch list to attempt it.
Oh my gosh, yeah. No, it's going to be a good rest of the year. So again, thanks everyone for listening. If you ever have any questions about anything or ever want us to talk about any movie, just want to know about what's happening with us, want to know our take on a particular movie, just let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, definitely send us recommendations if you've seen any good movies in 2020.
Yeah, we'd love that. We'd love to talk about them on the next episode. But again, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
I'm Carrie.
All right, and this is Steph. Bye.